Good morning. It is, let's see, it's Thursday, the 5th of May. Very nice to have you with us on this day and to join us for our panel discussion. Let me introduce our group to you. We begin with Dr. Alan Shartok, who is checking in with the many sources that he has in front of us.
The mailman.
Ready. Yeah, mailman.
Yep.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, I'm just fine. It's a heck of a day. We have so much to talk about, you know, the governor, Calieros, the untouchable. He's an untouchable, who's the head of the, you know, the SUNY Poly operation. He's untouchable, but now he's not so untouchable.
All right. We will talk.
And that explains it.
Yeah.
Where's Elliot Ness when you need him?
Rosemary Armeo is here. She is director of the journalism program at UAlbany.
She's embarrassed.
I'm not embarrassed. I just have nothing more to add to that.
No. Hard to believe. And Ira Fussfeld, who is the publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman, and a great pleasure to have you here
today,
sir.
Very nice to be back.
Mr.
Thank you very much. All right. Well, we can begin with that. We can begin with that story, if you wish. It is in regards to the an investigation by the state attorney general, Eric Schneiderman, into the proposed SUNY dormitory, which is part of a broader probe. As Alan mentioned, Elaine Calieros, who is the president of SUNY Polytechnic Institute and a powerful force in state economic development projects, is the focus of this investigation to see if he improperly coordinated with the real estate firm Columbia Development in possible violation of state antitrust laws. Before we go any further, I will disclose that because I have a familial relationship with one of the main spokespeople in this story, for one of the entities involved, I will bow out, recuse myself, and throw it over to the three of you to discuss it.
No. And the familial relationship, of course, as you know.
No. You don't have to get into that.
We don't?
No.
With the New York Times? Okay, so all right, but it's good that you're saying that. But the fact is that we are seeing the unthinkable happening here. We have the state attorney general. Now, this is not the feds. Almost never do you see the state going after one of their own. But here you see Eric Schneiderman, who is proving to have a little guts here, going after what is obviously a prize project of Governor Cuomo. And in the beginning, there was seemed to be some dissonance between Schneiderman and Cuomo. You may remember Cuomo, when he became the governor, decided he wanted to keep some of the jobs that he did as attorney general, and Schneiderman said, hell no. And then they got to be friends, and then Schneiderman played a little bit of supine role on the Moreland Act Commission, because he went around along with Cuomo to deputize everybody as assistant attorney generals in New York State. And then, you'll remember, Cuomo, without obviously consulting Schneiderman the way he should have been, just pulled the rug out from under Schneiderman and ended the Moreland Act Commission, one of the things that he has been held most responsible for. And it didn't look good for Schneiderman. Now here comes Schneiderman going after some of the hijinks that are going on in all of this. And these are all clearly Cuomo projects, and it looks bad for Cuomo.
And the allegation is what?
The allegation is that some of the people who were playing were paying to play. In other words, we haven't seen all the allegations yet, but subpoenas are flying. Let's put it that way. And when your group gives money to a campaign and then gets contracts back, it's worth looking at.
Yeah, what we're talking about is a proposed dorm that would go up on the nanoscale school, the new poly, the SUNY Poly school across Fuller Road from SUNY Albany. And the Times Union in Albany has done a terrific job covering this long before today, when they
terrific
was really their masterpiece today.
Yeah, they
but
did.
Columbia Development slowly bought up land, private land, in an area near the school, which turned out to be, well, the place where we really want a dorm to go, 10-minute walk from the school itself. And it was all very tightly done. The school put in a request for bids. And one came back, and oh, wow, guess what? It was from Colombia. And people looked askance at this. And so then there was a series of actions, which now must look very guilty. Calieros, the head of the school, suddenly left both the board of the Fuller Road Development, which was another development company working with Columbia in this project. Columbia and the school also put in a second round of bidding, said, oh, we only got one bid. We're going to put it out again. And this time, several bids came in, none of which was from Columbia. It backed away from the project. Doesn't that look kind of suspicious right now?
Well, and the fact that, as you just indicated, Calieros resigning from these
Correct.
Oversight groups looked somewhat puzzling also.
Right.
I do remember, I'll tell you the truth, here, I had talked a little bit about Calieros. I know that you've interviewed him, Rosemary.
He is a fascinating person. He is
brilliant
and a physicist, and he has brought a lot of jobs, and
he
thinks big. And I would like to think that it's all just suspicion, but he has this very... a former war fighter. He's out of the Middle East, and he has this mentality of, if you're looking for information about me, I'm above you, and I don't have to tell you. He's called reporters looking for information on his enterprises a terrorist. This was an investigative reporter in Buffalo. And so there's always been this idea that what's really going on. And it might just all be everything is fine, and it's just the way he holds things close to his chest. But this does not look very good right now.
I was told, Rosemary, when I was thinking about doing something on Calieros, from a number of senior people who really know their stuff, stay away from him. He's too powerful.
Mm-hmm.
You know that it would be overwhelming. Now it hasn't really stopped me because I didn't know. You know what to look at.
All I wanted to do is a very narrow look. I wanted to know what the deal had been when the Nano College came to UAlbany, what the ties were between them, and then abruptly they were severed. If you recall,
yeah.
And we wanted to know what were the meetings that went on that said, okay, well, now you're no longer part of UAlbany, and so I put in Freedom of Information requests, and I got like the minutes of the two Board of Trustees meetings where it was discussed, which of course is completely open anyway, and that's it. And supposedly there were no other documents. And I could never get very far with it.
Well, Calieros was a friend, as you know, or close with former Governor Cuomo.
He was the Speaker of the House, now in jail.
The first Governor Cuomo, Governor Pataki, now this governor. So really has had a substantial amount of clout.
But, you know, I do have to again say it's more than just his powerfulness. His power that's
yeah,
at
yeah.
stake. He is a brilliant thinker, and he has come up with all the stuff, which is why he attracted supporters like that. And it just seemed to me there's a right way to do what he is out to do.
So why are you resigning from boards is the point.
Exactly. It's just all this secretive stuff. And was it? He also makes more money than God. Which doesn't often happen from state
service. Yes and no. He's making more money than anybody else in the state system. He's the number one paid person, Rosemary. But that doesn't mean that's $76 million a year. I mean, maybe a couple hundred thousand bucks, right?
Well, he also points out, and I think correctly, that as a physicist at his level in private industry, he would make much more than he does in state service.
Sure.
There's a sort of a backhanded compliment about this, which is in most state universities around the country, and many private universities, or most private the highest paid employee in the state is usually the football coach or the basketball coach. So at least the one thing we can say nicely is that if they're going to pay somebody a lot of money, he's an academic.
Yeah.
Well, he's bringing money in. There's no question about that to the state, and that's why he's so valuable. Look, every Democratic governor now, every Republican governor is saying, I have to do something for upstate. And so here comes this guy who is bringing these chips and everything else, and it's upstate, and he is honored for that.
Okay, here's my point. You have all the power in the state. The governor, the speaker of the House are all behind this. You have this massive brain power in Calieros and the amazing crew he's put together at the Nano School. So how come you can't do a project like redevelopment of upstate in an open, clear, legal way? Is that so hard?
And as someone who really does not know the details of this case, I just want to make sure I'm clear. The allegation that Schneiderman is investigating is that in building a dormitory there was bid rigging. Of the other stuff we've been talking about, how brilliant he is, how powerful he is. Now, this is obviously not minor. On the other hand, it is such an isolated, small, tiny thing. Don't misunderstand. I think it ought to be they ought to investigate it and find out why it happened. But the building of a dormitory just seems to me to be so...
That's the state part of it. The state part of it, Ira. Okay. At the same time, and this is going on, he's also a target in a federal investigation.
All right, and you got Joseph Prococo, the governor's closest, quote, brother, unquote.
A name we haven't heard much of publicly until recently.
Right, but generally regarded as the governor's chief aide and enforcer. You got Joe Prococo under the subpoena now from the feds. And now you're going to see the relationship between, and you're seeing it in New York City where Cy Vance and Preper are getting together to do a joint investigation on some of this stuff. And now going on in Buffalo, and I want to remind everybody the reason this is happening in Buffalo with Preper Rara is that the lieutenant governor's husband is the U.S. attorney for Buffalo. In other words, Preparar's job up there. So he obviously has to recuse himself from all of this, which may be one of the most unlucky things that has ever happened to Andrew Cuomo. Hmm.
So for those of us who have been trying to connect the dots or follow the little moving cars along the board, in this particular case, if there is in fact corruption somewhere, in state government, we would be looking at the governor's office. This is not something that has anything to do with our friends in the legislature.
Oh, no. Look, there's enough to go around, for everybody. But obviously the main issue right now is the governor's team. It's the mayor's team down in New York City who are being looked at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sorry, Alan. I was going to add that in the dorm case, money came from both the president and the wife of the president of Columbia directly to the governor. And the wife gave money. This was just another one of those things that may be nothing, but man, you got to look at it like resigning from a board. She gave money in her maiden name using her Indiana home address rather than her New York address and her name, which would immediately link her as the wife of the president of Columbia Development.
Well, it's pretty confusing for everybody to, as you say, Ira, to follow the little dots. Mm-hmm. Nevertheless, this is the kind of thing that federal investigators and state attorney general investigators do well. I can't even imagine what the relationship between the attorney general and the governor is this morning.
It seemingly had improved over the years.
It had.
Yeah. Well,
but if you want to be governor, and state attorney generals have a way of becoming governor, got to show a little moxie.
Well, I tell you what, again, as somebody who's viewing this from 50 miles down the road and not really close, when you have a story saying the attorney general is investigating so-and-so, coming on the heels of everything else that happens in this town, it's not a stretch for somebody like me to presume there's got to be something there beside, there's got to be fire there.
It's as if somebody was wearing patchouli.
I'm not sure I'd make that analogy, but I would be if Schneiderman is going to be as dogged as has Barrera, for example. There's got to be a lot of nervous people in the Capitol.
We have just about 2 minutes before we go over and do a have a news break. Do we have any letters on this, sir?
Oh well, I'm sure we have some letters.
Alan is right. Oh, no, that was yesterday's.
I thought Rosemary was not to say any more about SUNY Poly. Jerry from Gilliland, do you know anything
about that? Who said that?
I don't know. No, I don't think that's true.
I have not yet been informed of it. If I lose my job later, I'll be in touch.
You're not going to lose your job.
I don't think so.
You are not going to lose your job.
In the front page of the Times Union today.
I know that the academic community, which is supposed to be so clear about academic freedom, which is why they awarded tenure. At one point, you were called in and told that some people didn't like what you were saying. And boy, did I get angry. And the minute I hear something like that again, I'm marching myself right up to the State University, and I am going to put my face in that office.
I doubt that will be necessary.
All right. I'm just telling you. And Tom wants to know. He's always watching, as you know. In my head, I'm imagining what each of you is saying, and I now have control over Alan. What? I think he means that the speech on the video and the speech in the video are not quite connected.
I see.
And that this morning we lost the speech while he was watching the video.
I actually got a primer in this because I made the same comment before the show went on the air, and we had the experts came in and explained to me why it's happening and it's being fixed.
Rick said, Lincoln, panel, remember what Abraham Lincoln said, you can't fool all the people all the time. And
Is that about Trump?
That's what I was going to just say. Yeah. Well, okay.
Government.
Okay, so Jim wants to know, Trumpism and Clintonism, dear panel, do we want to broaden the base of the Democratic Party behind the comfortably dozing donor class? Broaden it to bring back more of the independents, progressive youth, suffering workers, and the majority of discouraged workers who all oppose the neoliberal consensus behind unregulated corporate power. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you will all go to the New York Times today and read the wonderful article about what society should do about the fact that people are not going to the opera in the numbers that they should have been. And the Times had a wonderful article in which they got all the people together to try to come up with, ways to get young people into the opera.
That's great. I go to the opera, and it's all gray hairs.
Yeah, yeah. And one of the solutions was better food, in the tier.
Good
the
idea.
Tier, yeah. That was one of the, I don't think it's good enough an idea, but it's something.
Well, lower tickets would help, lower
yep,
ticket
that's
prices.
One of the things that was
we,
said.
We have to take a break, but we'll be back in just a few moments. Roundtable at WAMC.org to share your thoughts with us. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us, and we welcome you to our panel. Alan Chartok, yeah, isn't that great? Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Ira Fussfeld with us. So let's get to what you really want to complain about, and that is politics, right? Let's not complain.
Talk,
right.
And complain.
John Kasich is out. John Kasich is out of the race. He was a fairly dramatic story, from what I hear. He was headed to Washington to talk to donors. Was in the air, halfway there,
turned around,
looked around everybody, and said, "You know what? I'm done. Let's turn around." And back they went to Ohio, and he announced at 5 o'clock. That he was going to be suspending his campaign.
I'm shocked, I tell you, shocked.
One day Mario Cuomo said to me on the Capital Connection back in the day, he said, is that what you really think, Chartok? And I said, yes, sir, it is. And he said, who cares? Now, the point really is that I think this is a bit of a who cares story. I mean, it takes a lot to think that Kasich dropping out means a lot.
I wondered why he was in so long. I'm not sure what his candidacy was about.
Well, I think it's a who cares story, but not when they write the great history of this campaign. I think that he was one of 17 candidates, and I think many people, particularly moderates, would say, who are not inclined to support a Republican, might say, this is a guy who I might have voted for, but he had the misfortune of running at a time of Trump, and he had a misfortune of running when there were all of these other people out there. So his personality did not allow him to step out. He's just a low-key guy. I just think that this is a guy who could have been the president of the United States in 1964 or at another time in our history, but not this time.
Not with this Republican Party.
Not with the party as it is, and not in this with that many people in the field, and not at the time of Trump.
You say that like it's an unusual thing. There were that many people in the field in the last election. Too.
Were there for that long a time?
Not 17 for that long.
I think there was maybe 10 or so.
Television was just reporting that Trump and Romney nailed the nomination within a week of each other.
Yeah,
so
that,
it
I,
was
that
the same
it, okay,
amount of time.
All right. But I don't think the same amount of people. I don't think we had as many candidates, did we?
You had a slew of them. There were debates.
I don't believe more than 8 or 10. And I don't think that most of them hung on as long. I mean, my memory may be wrong, but do we disagree that I think we were all saying as this thing was moving along that if we had to go for a Republican, Kasich is a guy who we might say is not so bad.
Well, and the polls as of right now indicate that Kasich is still the guy, the one Republican
who could beat both
Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton.
Well, as you know, I'm really interested in this loser psychology. Why do people hang on as long as they do? What are they really aiming for? and how, yes, I understand it's their right. Everyone, please don't write and tell me they have a perfect right to run. I understand that. You can run, too, if you want. But why?
Because he thought he could win in a brokered convention. It was the, there was
and
no other reason.
Saw that wasn't going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, he saw those polls that said, I can beat Hillary, and he was prepared to bring those polls to Cleveland with him,
right.
and was hoping upon hope that somehow that the Trump phenomenon would not be so strong as to get Trump the delegates he needed.
Right.
So I think it was surely a long shot, but that's the answer to your question, I think. He thought he could do it that way.
So now Donald
and
Trump.
Why is Bernie still going?
So now, well, and we'll talk about that in a second. So now Donald Trump is the presumed nominee, although we're not allowed to call him that on NPR.
Is that right?
We got an email. I want to talk to you about this. We got an email yesterday from National Public Radio from the news division. And it said, after consulting with many officials, here is what we can say about Donald Trump now that he has no actual opponents anymore for the GOP nomination. We are to call him the apparent nominee or the assured nominee.
Now, let me ask you a question, Joe, because you're the vice president for news and public
press.
Yes,
sir.
Okay, so let me ask you this question. Do we care what NPR tells us?
I was
going to
ask the same question.
Well,
are they dictating local
they
policy?
They are dictating. They are telling. I think they would always like us to be consistent
with
one
them.
Another.
Yeah.
However, but my question is more about how is Donald Trump the assured nominee? First of all, if we have not yet voted in these major contests, New Jersey and California being two of them, how is he assured? Also, and they say you will stay away from presumptive, however, because of the very specific definition that presumptive nominee, that person has accumulated the required number of delegates to be the Democratic or Republican Party's nominee, but hasn't been officially made the nominee.
Ah, that's interesting.
So, but to me, it's the opposite.
Where did that definition of presumptive come from?
Well, a bunch of gray hairs got around a table at NPR.
Well, is this from Mike Oreskes?
We love Mike Oreskes.
Yeah, I know it. He's a good guy.
And talked for, you know.
This is from Mark Memmott.
We'll talk for 45 minutes and then, you know, cried into the handkerchiefs and then came up with this ridiculous policy. That's what it is. It's ridiculous.
Okay. So for
well,
the
I mean,
the, purposes,
I'm sorry. I just want to say that the head of the Republican Party came out and said he is the presumptive
misspelled
candidate.
It,
he did misspell
he did
it
misspell
in the tweet.
It, yes.
But what officials did they talk to? It must not have included, you know, the one guy who I think actually does get to decide the label
of what you're going to call Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And okay. So I just throw that out as interesting. I think on this program we will still refer to him as the presumptive nominee, right?
Joe, refer to him any way you want.
I feel weird saying. Oh, they also then they came back a couple hours later. They had another meeting and they said we also are comfortable with the term de facto nominee.
It's just
stupid.
Yeah. Okay. So that's what they were doing yesterday. Now we have the Bernie Sanders. Let's talk about Bernie Sanders for a second. And so he was on Morning Edition this morning, right? And was talking about the path and ultimately talking about the superdelegates and the changing of the superdelegates and contesting the convention and going to the very end.
Rosemary?
Oh, I was going to stay quiet.
Well, okay.
Go ahead.
You know, okay, it is clear that if you are a superdelegate, as there were in the Obama contest with the Hillary, if you're a superdelegate and you see that the country wants not your candidate who you're pledged to, you might change your mind. But why in the world would you change your mind if, in fact, your constituency as a superdelegate, the people who are in your state, voted for Hillary?
Now, from my understanding of this situation is that Bernie Sanders keeps on likening this to 2008, where Hillary Clinton did not have the nomination, and when she dropped out right after the California race, right before or right after? I guess right before.
Don't remember.
Okay, it was early June anyway. So she dropped out, and then that is when she urged those superdelegates to change their affiliation to Barack Obama. But what Bernie Sanders is asking for is different.
Very different. Look at it this way. I'm a superdelegate, and Bernie's coming to me and saying, oh, yeah, hi, I'm the one calling you corrupt, and the whole system involving you is wrong, and you need to switch to me, even though I've only been a Democrat for a short period of time and don't care about the party at all. I'm working for the American people, apparently, unlike you, and so therefore vote for me. I don't think that's a strong argument.
Well, there's a rationale, it seems to me, for why he is doing this, right? Because people are saying to Bernie Sanders, who I voted for, as I've pointed out before, people are saying to Bernie Sanders, how can you stay in if you can't find a path to win? So the only justification, intellectual justification, is you say, if lightning strikes, if the superdelegates choose to change their minds and vote for me, then the path is open. Otherwise, the path is closed. So he has to say that if he wants to stay in, and he clearly wants to stay in.
Well, I don't know. Here's a guy who was not affiliated officially with the Democrats for all these years. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess he could say in his own mind, I don't have particular loyalty to the good of the Democratic Party, even though I'm running as a Democrat. And I understand he, in fact, talks about how I understand my path is now very narrow and it, in effect, is a long shot path. But I think we've reached a point, long past reached a point, where it's clear that Hillary is, in fact, going to be the nominee and that he has already said he will support her if she is the nominee. And he knows he has already said he doesn't want Donald Trump to be president. There's got to put a point in time where Bernie says, I have really advanced my cause and my candidacy as far as it can go, and I'm hurting the Democrats and Hillary if I do not bow out right now.
He definitely is hurting her already. Donald Trump was on all over TV yesterday saying, hey, look at this. I didn't think this would happen. I've closed it. She can't close it. Already is hammering her based on what Bernie is doing. I don't think that should hold him down.
Okay,
he should do what he thinks is right.
Okay, but there's another side to this. And the other side is that Bernie is fighting for the soul of the Democratic Party. We know that.
I hate that expression.
Well, I don't care whether you hate it.
What does it mean?
It means that he thinks that Hillary and the Hillaryites and some of the others have gone over the traces and are basically part of the corporate superstructure of the United States. And that if he stays in, let me finish this one thought here. If he stays in, and he goes to the convention and he talks to the policy people and the platform committee and everybody else, that he can bring the Democratic Party away from the sort of Clintonian, I'm a really Democratic Republican.
Don't you think he's largely succeeded doing that already?
Not really. Not really. I think, in a campaign you say anything you want to say, but then when you rule, it's different.
I think he has already moved Hillary to the left of where she wanted to be during the primary season. And I think he has accumulated enough capital in going into the convention that he is going to be able to have a prime speaking spot, and he's going to be able to continue to advance his point of view. But we need to have him, they need to have him get on board behind Hillary right now, because she's got to start picking up steam and does not need the kinds of criticism that she keeps getting from him that Trump is already parroting.
Okay, now Ryan writes an interesting letter. He said, why superdelegates could switch? Hey, guys, keep in mind that yesterday's news broke that a judge said Hillary may be deposed for the email case and that a hacker came out and said Clinton's servers were easy for him to hack. We still don't know what's going to happen there. If Hillary is indicted or faces a scandal, then Bernie could still be the nominee. Also, it's disingenuous to claim Sanders is hurting Hillary. You don't want the candidate to be bruised. Pick a stronger want a candidate to be bruised, pick a stronger candidate. By the way, the assumption, just as it was with the Republicans by Cruz, the assumption that if Hillary for some reason was knocked out of the box, indicted or whatever else happened, that Bernie would be the candidate, I don't know that I would buy that. I don't think that that's necessarily so. I think it's more probable that Joe Biden would be the candidate. They don't have to pick Bernie.
I might have said that 4 or 5 months ago, but Bernie has so much populist support in the country now. I think the Democrats could make a strong case for him to be the nominee.
So let me just throw this out. What happens if he wins California?
Uh-huh. I think he's staying in for California, and I think he's also looking at this you know, thing about an indictment.
But does he, so he wins California, does he have enough delegates?
No.
No.
So then that's the answer to your question.
Well, no.
He hasn't won any of the big, giant Democratic states.
She still has, what does she constantly remind people? She still has polled more than 2 million votes more than Bernie nationwide. Correct. It's not as like she's sneaking up from the behind.
Well, another thing is that a deposition, I mean, she blew it away in Benghazi. A deposition could be another... She's not out of the park, but I do see that Bernie has some hope that there's two ways in. He could, if he got California and New Jersey, that'd be hard to counter. If she's indicted,
New Jersey
or
seems
called
unlikely,
into question,
right?
Yeah,
I think
right.
She's up 60-32 in New Jersey.
And how about in California?
In California, I heard she was leading, but it was closer.
Yeah.
It's coming down as it has in every contest. It starts out far away, and then it.
So
narrows.
You have no problem with right to the night, the day of the nominating speeches, that Bernie stays in and says what might be construed as negatives about Hillary, and
Bernie has weighed this, and I think he has more of a shot at getting it than. Certainly Kasich did. I could never understand that. Or Martin O'Malley. What the
More of a shot of getting the nomination.
Of getting a nomination, yeah. It does not seem so much as a long shot to me.
Ted says if Sanders had the lead Clinton had or has, the Berners would not be complaining about the primary process.
Well, of course. And that's a given.
And Robert says, sorry, but watch Hillary veer to the right once Bernie's out. She'll try to appeal to conservatives on the fence. By the way, that's always what happens.
Yeah, people and the Republican is going to do the different. Yeah, He'll veer to the left.
The real issue, says Don, our friend Don, is to what extent will Bernie vigorously support Hillary, and will he emphasize to his supporters the need to vigorously support Hillary?
No, I don't see that happening.
Well, he has said he would, but we'll see what happens.
He has said he would support her, not vigorously. There's ways to do this.
But he's not running as a third-party candidate. I want to remind you all.
No, I don't see that happening.
That if he really had animus, that's the kind of thing one might do.
Right.
I understand the shades of gray here, Rosemary. He did say he would work very hard to make sure that Donald Trump wasn't. So.
Okay.
I don't know. What's the option on that?
Do we need the optic of them standing on the podium with the arms clasped and hands raised?
Well, that is what Hillary admittedly said that she wants yesterday.
Yes.
She said, I'm more than happy to have him go through all the way through California, but I am hoping for that moment where we come together and say, we're together.
Well, that's the right thing for her to say.
Yeah,
exactly.
She has to say.
And Michael says, I love Bernie. He made a point this morning saying we are supplementing the Walmart family worth $158 billion. They pay their workers below living wage, and we have to give them food stamps and Medicaid. He is so right. Too bad he hasn't a chance. That's what he said. Okay. And I listen to you every morning. I miss you terribly on weekends. It's obvious that Alan is not a Hillary fan, but Rosemary and Libby. I should say, I'm going to add that R. Please explain to me why Hillary is not believed to be trustworthy. It's not why she's not believed to be trustworthy. It is that a lot of Americans feel that way.
They feel that way from 30 years worth of mudslinging. 30 years.
That could
be. I answer all these letters from people saying, how can you say she's not a criminal? Show me an indictment. Show me a trial. She is past all of this. But still, you throw enough mud at a wall and some of it sticks.
Let's take a break. We'll be right back and continue our conversation, do our last wraparound, and we'll be right back after this.
Support for WAMC comes from Mark Lawson Antiques, Saratoga Springs, and Colony, New York. Purchasing jewelry and diamonds, coin collections, Chinese and Asian antiques, fine art and estates, marklawson.com. The Whistling Kettle, Troy and Boston Spa. Offering reservations for Mother's Day, gift ideas such as gift cards, loose tea, or Tea of the Month Club subscriptions, thewhistlingkettle.com. And Simmons Recovery Consulting, advocating for public entities that are grant recipients of a FEMA disaster, specializing in financial strategy development and grants management, simmonsrecoveryconsulting.com.
Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. We just have a few minutes left, and we will end here. There is an article in the New York Times this morning. Donald Trump, now the presumptive Republican presidential nominee.
They didn't get the NPR.
We'll hear from NPR.
No, this is also, by the way, quoting the New York Times, I would say. But all right. Anyway, apparently they didn't get the de facto memo.
Did they spell it correctly?
Yes.
Yeah, excellent.
Oddly, they did.
Nice.
Keenly aware that many in his own party and many Americans, frankly, are scared and anxious about the idea of being in the Oval Office. Even he is not sure how a deeply divided nation would adjust to the first 100 days of a Trump presidency. So he decided to, he sketched out his plans and said shortly after the November 8th election, President-elect Trump and his vice president, most likely a governor or member of Congress, he says, would begin interviewing candidates for the open Supreme Court seat and quickly settle on a nominee in the mold of Justice Antonin Scalia. He would start building a government based on relationships, perhaps inviting Republican leaders Paul Ryan, Mitch McConnell to escape the chilly Washington fall and schmooze at Mar-a-Lago over golf and two-pound lobsters. On inaugurations, he would go to a beautiful gala ball or two, but focus mostly on rescinding Obama's executive orders on immigration and calling up corporate executives to threaten punitive measures if they shift jobs out of the United States. And by the end of his 100 days as the nation's 45th leader, the wall with Mexico would be designed, the immigration ban on Muslims would be in place, the audit of the Federal Reserve would be underway, and plans to repeal the Affordable Care Act would be in motion.
Okay, so everybody says this guy's a clown, he's a this, he's a that. In some ways, now this is not Alan endorsing him, he's brilliant. He knows what the underlayment of American philosophy is when it comes to immigration. Americans, you know, they may say the right things. If you took Sociology 101, you might say the right thing. But there is a huge number of people who just think we should stop letting people into the country. There is an evil anti-Muslim bias in this country, and he knows it, and he's going to it. He knows the same thing about the Mexican thing. They've polled on that, and they know what they, and he knows what he thinks he knows what he's doing, and it's gotten him all this way. Now, I think the Scalia thing is a mistake. I think that's a big error because of all the things that I talk to people about, the one thing that scares them is more a continuation of this conservative Supreme Court.
You know, I know that we have said on this program, and Alan before most of us, that there is a chance that this guy could win.
I do believe that. So
I don't think we could ever eliminate the potential of that happening. But I would commend everybody, if it's available on the internet, to find an interview that Andrea Mitchell did yesterday with Bob Kerry, the former U.S. Senator, former president of the New School.
Right.
And if you he recited chapter and verse statistically why this is simply not going to happen, and in terms of the amount of support he has among Latinos, which is minimal, the amount of support he has among African Americans, which is minimal, the amount of support that he has among women, which is minimal. He has won a primary season by getting the majority of the votes from a crowded field, from a small number of the people who vote in this country. I mean, at the end of the day, the people who are voting in the—I believe that Kerry used the statistic, and I may have it wrong, that he won 40% of the vote of 21% of the American voting public. It's a very small number.
But he won.
That he won, and we can never—we can't predict how this snowball may continue to roll
downhill. And, Ira, he knew how to win.
But let's see what happens when he's talking to a field that's much more broad than the narrow field that he's just finished.
Real quick, in the minute that we have left, does it mean anything? Should we take anything substantive from the fact that two of the biggest names in the Republican Party, former presidents George H.W. Bush and George W. Bush, say that they will not endorse Donald Trump?
Yeah, I think that the endorsements per se mean nothing, but the symbolism of people like them and others who will join them is going to resonate among moderate Republicans.
Yeah, those moderates may vote for Hillary based on the fact that she may be more to their liking than
there are
than
people
Trump
who
is.
Would never have thought to vote for Hillary, much less any Democrat, who may now do it, or they may simply stay home.
Which case, vote for Hillary.
Right.
We are out of time.
No.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry to hear that.
We'll be back tomorrow, though.
Yeah, we'll will.
Not tomorrow. Me.
You won't.
No. Yeah.
When
no.
are you back?
I'm not sure yet.
All right. Rosemary will be here tomorrow. Alan will be
Indeed.
Here tomorrow. And we'll be back, and we'll continue the show after this short break.